Bible, open it up to Colossians 3. Colossians 3. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one in a seat nearby you. Grab it, take it. We would love for you to have that. And these verses are also going to be on the screens. So right now, we are in a series walking through the book of Colossians, and you can catch all of that on our website. Today is really going to build off where we were at last week, and it's going to get really practical. It also might get a little tense. You guys okay with that? Did it get tense? Well, I'm going to do it anyway. I just thought I'd ask. Let's get going. Verse 12. Since God chose you to be a holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. And whatever you do or say, do it as a representative of the Lord Jesus. That plays out in everything. I mean, what clothes, figuratively speaking, what clothes am I wearing? What attributes am I putting on? Am I wearing mercy and compassion and kindness, gentleness, patience, humility? Is that what I'm wearing? Or am I putting on something else? Because if you think about it, the attributes that you're wearing, they're going to affect every area of your life, whether it's good or bad. You could be putting on pride or humility, patience or impatience, kindness or anger. No matter what you're putting on to wear, no matter who you're wearing, if you were here last week, that's going to affect every area of your life. First and foremost, it's going to affect your relationships. Man, I want good relationships. Man, whether that's my marriage or with my kids or friends, coworkers, neighbors, whoever it is, I want great relationships. And I know you want that too. And that starting point for a great relationship, it's a simple principle. Here it is. It's always about the other person. That's it. Nothing profound, nothing deep. It's that simple. It's always about the other person. If my relationships are about me, they're going to struggle. They're going to suffer. And that's how we tend to approach our relationships. Whether we realize it or not, we tend to approach them as if my relationships, there's something in them that I can get for myself. They're there to satisfy me. They're there to fulfill me. They're there to make me happy. And if they're not, well, obviously then there's something wrong with the other person, not me. So how do you approach your relationships? Is the focus about you or is it about the other person? It's really easy to say, well, Matt, it's about the other person, absolutely. Okay. But do your actions support that? If you're single, if you're a student, if you're a friend, if you're a family member, no matter what type of relationship you're talking about, and all of us have multiple types of relationships in our lives, if the focus is on you, your relationships will suffer. They'll struggle. But if it's about the other person, then they can thrive, and actually, they can bring you more satisfaction. This is what Colossians is starting to kind of lay out. And it's going to give some practical examples of different relationships, different types of relationships where this principle can be played out. We're going to hit two of them today, marriage and kids. And if you're not married and if you don't have kids, this still absolutely applies to you. These are just examples because remember, it's all about the principle that it's always about the other person. And these examples that Colossians is going to lay out, they were completely radical 2,000 years ago. I mean, I wish we had time to go into the historical context of what Paul is saying right here, because it was just crazy what he was saying back then. It was radical then, and it can still be tense now. Here's the first one, verse 18. Wives, submit to your husbands, as is fitting for those who belong to the Lord. Wives, submit to your husbands. All right, I should have had Tim preach this week. Husbands, love your wives and never treat them harshly. All right, so let's talk. Because obviously this can be tense. I want us to laugh, but this can be tense. Because did we just really say wives submit to your husbands? Did we just use that word? Like some of us, when we hear that word submit, maybe we just tense up a little bit. Maybe our back stiffens. Maybe we grit our teeth through a smile. Submit, okay. Clench our fist a little bit because submit sounds like a curse word. It sounds like a curse word because it's been abused. It has. I mean, we've got to understand what it actually means, and just as importantly, we've got to understand what it doesn't mean because the word submit, the concept of it, has been abused. Chauvinistic men have abused this word. Not all men, but some men have used it to abuse power, to control, to exploit, to oppress women. Like again, not all men, but let's call a spade a spade. It's happened. It still happens. And to be very clear, This verse is specifically talking about in the context of a Christian marriage. It is not talking about in the workplace. It is not talking about socially. It's not saying that women can't lead a corporation or run for office. Not saying that at all. It's specifically talking about in a Christian marriage. And I don't want that to scare you off either, or for you to brush it off. Well, Matt, if I can lead a corporation and I can run for office, why should I, or why would I even want to submit to my husband in our marriage? That's a great question. That's exactly the question you should be asking. I know some outstanding women who are leaders. My wife is a leader. I'm trying to raise my daughter to be a strong leader. And this doesn't take away from that at all. But in order to see that, we've got to know what this actually means and what it doesn't mean. Ladies, submission does not mean silence, and submission does not mean second class. It does not mean that you don't have a voice, that you can't have a voice, or that your voice doesn't count. It does not mean that your husband gets whatever he wants, and it does not mean that you are inferior in any way or have less value or cannot contribute. And any man who believes that women are inferior and should be silent and because of that should demand submission, that's not a man that's worth following and not a man worth submitting to. In fact, in my opinion, that's not really a man. That's just a boy who can shave. Okay? Women are created in the image of God, which means they have the same value, the same intrinsic value and worth that a man does. No more, no less. And a real man knows that. I think the creation account gives a great picture of this. So when God created Eve, he took a rib from Adam. And you can read all about this in the first two chapters of Genesis. When God took this rib to create Eve, he didn't take the rib from Adam's back. So women aren't supposed to be behind men. I don't even like it when my wife walks behind me. I'm not saying anything theologically about that. I just don't like that. I like her being next to me. Women aren't supposed to be behind men. If we believe that, if that's our view, that women are behind men, well, if we play that out, it leads to chauvinism. And chauvinism is sinful. And we know where it leads to. That leads to oppression, it leads to abuse, and it leads to denying the intrinsic value created in women. It's wrong. God also didn't take the rib from Adam's front. So women aren't out in front of men. If we believe that, if we have this view that women are supposed to be out in front of men, if you play that out, that leads to the extreme end of feminism. It's just as dangerous. This view that women are better than men. I'm not talking about empowering. We want to empower women. That's a good thing. But this view that women are better than men, that neuters men. And it denies the same intrinsic value created in them. And we see this more and more today. Where men are constantly portrayed as the idiots. And that they're always the butt of jokes. Now, granted, sometimes we deserve it. Like, If you've ever watched some of the videos on social media or YouTube that are titled, Why Women Live Longer Than Men, it's a good time. It really is. It's just nothing but videos of guys doing stuff that at the very least are going to end in an ER trip. Famous last words for some guys have been, hey, watch this. Right? It's true. Like, I've done my fair share. My wife, my friends have plenty of stories on me. But to perpetually try and humiliate men and make them viewed as idiots or the butt of jokes, that neuters men and it denies the same intrinsic value created in them. It's just as dangerous as chauvinism. It's just dangerous in a different kind of way. God didn't take the rib from Adam's front. He didn't take the rib from Adam's back. Instead, he took the rib to create Eve from Adam's side. There's a lot of symbolism in that. Husbands and wives are meant to be side by side, not one in front of the other. Y'all are a team. You're partners. You're meant to walk through life together, side by side, until one of you dies or Jesus comes back, whichever one comes first. Man, this picture of the rib coming from the side also shows us that we are completely equal in value and worth, and both created in the image of God. So then in a Christian marriage, submission means you are side by side, but wives, you are willing to follow your husband's leadership. Well, what if my husband doesn't deserve to be followed? That's a good question. It's a really good question. If we're talking about abuse or abandonment or sin, no, you don't follow that. You don't submit to abuse. You don't submit to sin. Absolutely not. And if your husband's not doing his part, we'll get to his part in a second. Man, you're not submitting to that either. But what the intention for this is for us to be side by side, and wives, you're willing to say, man, I'll follow my husband. That's what submission means. I'm going to voluntarily follow my husband. It's a posture of the heart. I want to follow my husband. Because even though you are equal, even though you're standing side by side, your husband's gonna be held accountable first for the spiritual direction of your family. So when Eve sinned in the garden in Genesis 3, who did God confront first? Adam. He confronted Adam first. Why? Eve still had to be held accountable. She still had to own up to what she did, and she was confronted. But God confronted Adam first because he was responsible and held accountable for the spiritual direction of their family. So my family, Kelly and I, are side by side. We lead together, we make decisions together, but I'm held accountable first for the spiritual direction of our family. That means our marriage, that means with our kids. And Colossians kind of underlies this and tells guys what they're responsible for as husbands and what they're called to. And if we're doing this right, it's a massive blessing because a real man is looking for ways to prop up and empower his wife and other women so that they thrive. That's what a real man is doing. Wives, if you're doing your part, this is an honor and a blessing. Husbands, if you're doing your part, this is an honor and a blessing for your wife. So if submission means to voluntarily follow, husbands, you gotta ask yourself, am I worth following? Am I worth following? A real man is looking for ways to serve, not looking for ways for her to submit. Am I worth following? Guys, here's your part, verse 19. Husbands, love your wives and never treat them harshly. All right, guys, this is not a feeling. This is an active choice daily to love our wives and not treat them harshly. Daily, you have to choose this. Some days you'll be better at it than others. Don't ever demand submission. Don't ever demand submission. Instead, you're always looking for ways to serve her. Man, you're never called to lead out of a perceived right or entitlement. That's not what leadership is. Leadership is service. I mean, think about it. Would you rather follow a leader who leads out of a demand for submission, leads out of entitlement, leads out of authority? Would you rather follow that leader? You ever had a boss like that? I have. Or would you rather follow a leader who is always looking to serve others first? If you're a husband, that's the way it should be. You're called to serve and sacrifice in order to lead your wife, in order to bless her. And it all comes in the word love. Husbands, love your wives. Ephesians 5 says it this way. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loves the church. Well, that sounds really poetic, but what's that actually mean? How did Christ actually love the church? Well, Jesus loved the church by dying for the church. Dying for someone is the greatest act of love that you could ever show. If you're willing to die for somebody, then you'd be willing to do anything else for them, right? Including encourage them, including serve them. Husbands, this is the expectation put on you and put on me in a Christian marriage. We're called to love our wives in such a way that we'd be willing to die for her. And we would all say that. We would all say, yeah, man, I'd be willing to die for my wife. We would all say that. Guys, this is a great opportunity for you to nod in agreement and let your wife see you doing it. I'm trying to tee you up. I'm trying to help you out. Like, we would all say that. We would all say that we would die for our wives. But most likely, and hopefully not, we'll never be put in that position. Or so we think. But in actuality, this is what was really convicting me this week when I was studying. In actuality, you're put in that position every single day. You can die for your wife every single day. It's not some romantic idea. You can die for your wife on a daily basis by serving her, by putting her needs above your own, by looking for ways to prop her up and empower her. This is the expectation of what it means to love your wife. This is what we are called to do. Husbands, you were called to serve and sacrifice in order to accommodate your wife. It's that simple. Not the other way around. It's not about you, it's about her. Because remember, it's always about the other person, especially in a marriage. So when it comes to the hierarchy in a family, if there's such a thing, the hierarchy in a Christian family, husbands, you're at the bottom. You're at the bottom. In my family, Kelly's number one besides Jesus. In our family, Kelly's number one, then it's my kids, then it's me. And I get to do this. It's a privilege and an honor to be last. Why? Because that's what Jesus did. Philippians 2 talks about how he came to serve, not be served, that Jesus humbled himself, that he considered others better than himself. I get to put my wife in front of me. That's what we're called to do. We're here to accommodate her, not the other way around. So I read a story about this week, a story that a surgeon, how he experienced this kind of love, and he wrote it down. This surgeon, he performed an operation on a young woman where he removed a tumor, and in order to remove the tumor, he had to sever one of her facial nerves. And by severing this particular facial nerve, it left her mouth permanently twisted. And this is what the doctor experienced. This is what he wrote down. He said this, and I read a story about a young husband. And he was in the room with his wife, and he stands on the opposite side of the bed of her, and together, they just seemed to dwell in the evening lamplight, isolated from me and private. Who are they, I asked myself. Like he and this wire mouth I have made, who gaze at and touch each other so generously. The young woman speaks. Will my mouth always be like this? She asks. Yes, I say it will. It's because the nerve was cut. She nods and then is silent. But the young man smiles. I like it. I think it's kind of cute. All at once, I know who he is. I understand and I lower my gaze. One is not bold in an encounter with a God. Unmindful, he bends to kiss her crooked mouth, and I, so close, can see how he twists his lips to accommodate hers, to show her that their kiss still works. Husbands, we are meant to twist our lips to accommodate our wives, okay? Not just physically, in everything. And just hearing that story, don't you want to be like that guy? I do. I absolutely do. Man, thinking about ways where I can serve and bless and honor Kelly, that I could twist my lips in whatever way to accommodate her, man, that just gives me a sense of joy and satisfaction and honor and duty. Like, I want to do that as a husband. That's what we're called to. And wives, it's okay to want that in your husband, for him to bless and serve and honor you that way. Wives, would you be willing to follow a husband like that? Husbands, this is what we're called to do. This is what it looks like to love your wife. To serve and sacrifice for her, to twist your lips to accommodate hers. Practically, this is what it means. It means that we need to do everything we can to understand her world better so that we can serve her best. That means spending time with her. That means listening to her, not listening to fix, listening to understand. That means putting her needs in front of our own. And here's what the really cool thing is. If I serve and sacrifice, that actually brings satisfaction in everything. If you serve and sacrifice, that will bring you satisfaction. No different in marriage. But we live in a world that says the opposite. We live in a world that's all about number one. Hey, if you want to get satisfaction, you do you. I'm going to get what's mine. That's the way to be satisfied. But that approach, like, it never really satisfies, does it? It always leaves you wanting more. And in the end, it leaves you frustrated and even feeling isolated. So remember the principle that it's always about the other person. If that's my lens, then to serve and sacrifice for my wife is actually going to bring me more joy, more satisfaction. That's the call. Ann Morrow, who was the wife of Charles Lindbergh. Lindbergh was the first person to ever fly across the Atlantic. She said this about her husband. She said, the man I was to marry believed in me and what I could do. And consequently, I found that I could do more than I realized. I sure hope that one day that's the way Kelly will describe me. Do you love your wife? Do you love her? Do you serve her? Do you believe in her? Do you look for ways to empower her and prop her up, not only so that she can thrive, but so that she can accomplish the purpose God has given her based on her gifts and experiences, based on her talents and passions, based on her struggles? This is our call. This is what it looks like to love your wife. And guys, she'll be willing to follow you if you serve her. She'll be willing to follow you if she knows who you're following. Who are you following? Are you following Jesus or are you following somebody or something else? Are you worth following? You don't have to serve your wife. You don't have to. You get to. It's a posture of the heart. Wives, you don't have to submit to your husband. You don't have to. You get to. What God has designed marriage to be between two Christian people is a sacrificial love that mutually elevates both people. It's about the other person. Can we take a deep breath? That was a lot. Just everybody can exhale right now. Okay, I promise we won't get tense anymore. Ladies, can I give you a quick piece of advice? On the way home today in the car, do not say to your husband, "Did you hear what Matt said today?" Don't do that. Don't. Like, in all seriousness, what that will do, that'll ruin it. And it will push your husband away. Don't do that. You don't get to be the Holy Spirit. All right? And guys, in the car on the way home today, don't say to your wife, "I can think of a couple areas where you need to submit." Don't. Oh. You're going to get hit if you say that. Don't do that. Your job is not to correct or convict the other person. But if you really want to start a healthy and productive conversation, start off by confessing where you fall short, where you could do better. Guys, lead out in this. Start by confessing where you fall short, and then ask your wife, ask her this, what she thinks you could do better. Wives, be very gentle. Gentle and gracious in your response. And then follow your husband's lead. And then if you have kids, let them hear this conversation. Let them hear it. We want our kids to hear this. Model for them what a marriage looks like, what confrontation looks like, what conversation and communication really looks like. You want them to learn that now, not the hard way when they're adults. Let your kids hear you doing this now, because then all they're going to think for the rest of their lives is, this is what I'm supposed to do, because it is. That's the other example. Kids, verse 20, it says this, "Children, always obey your parents, for this pleases the Lord." So we're not going to spend a lot of time on kids obeying their parents, and maybe some of you want to yell at me right now. Matt, let's spend all of the time on that one. Please, for the love of God, tell them. They're right here. Tell them to obey. I get it. Like, if that's you, find me afterwards. I'll give you a hug. I'm in the same stage. I get it. We're not going to talk too much about that because most of our kids aren't in here, and most of our kids aren't going to watch this online. But I'll say this. Kids, if you are in here, if you want to please God, obey your parents. If you want your childhood to go a whole lot smoother than it could, obey your parents, all right? Man, they are not perfect, despite what they might tell you. They're not perfect. They need Jesus just as much as you and I do, but they love you. They're trying to do the best that they can. And when they discipline you, that's not to be mean. It's not so that you don't have any fun. It's not because they don't understand. It just means that they've been there before and they know that whatever they're disciplining you for, maybe you're not obeying, maybe you have a bad attitude, maybe you're talking back. If they're disciplining you because they know that if that continues, as you grow older, that's going to lead to greater consequences and more pain. They don't want that for you. So I know this is kind of crazy to hear, but when they discipline you, it's not fun, but they're doing it because they love you. So if you really want to please God, obey your parents. And then in different parts of the Bible, it actually says that your life will go well if you obey your parents, all right? But the back half of that verse says this, "Fathers, do not aggravate your children, or they will become discouraged." So I remember throwing this verse out when I was a kid at my parents. Yeah, that's the kind of kid I was. I was usually trying to avoid, obviously some kind of consequence that I had coming. And then I also remember my parents responding in some way kind of like this. "Oh, that's so cute. You're using the Bible to try to manipulate your way out of trouble. Good try. Good try." Like, as a dad now, I get this verse. I totally get it. And it's really convicting at the same time. Now, this is for both moms and dads, but I think why this is directed specifically at dads, number one, because we're going to be held accountable first, but I also think, dads, we're more prone to this. In my house, I am the offender of this more than Kelly is. Moms are not off the hook, but dads, we're usually the ones that break this. Now, we absolutely should be disciplining our kids, absolutely, but we have to be clear on the motivation for our discipline. Am I disciplining my kids because I love them? Am I disciplining my son or daughter because I see this behavior or this attitude or this pattern that's going to lead to greater consequences and greater pain in their life, so I want to cut that off? Am I disciplining them so that they can grow and so that they can thrive? Is that my motivation? Or is it something else? Am I disciplining my kids because I'm mad at them? And giving them consequences makes me feel better. Am I disciplining them because they're not representing me well? They're making mom and I look bad. So I'm disciplining them because you're making me look bad. Well, that's going to aggravate them. That's going to discourage them. Or am I disciplining my kids because I don't like something about myself? Think about that one for just a second. Let me tell you where I struggle on this one. One of my kids, and I'm not going to tell you which one, one of my kids has some of the best parts of Kelly, some of the worst parts of me. And because that, out of all three of my kids, I am harder on this particular child. And Kelly's had to point this out to me. And it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense because this kid is compassionate, thoughtful, brings me so much joy, just awesome. But I'm hardest on this particular kid, and I realize why. The reason I'm hardest is because I don't like things that are in this particular child that I don't like about myself. So it's unfair. I try to squash things in this child that I don't like about me. That's not fair. That's just aggravating and discouraging. Just because I got an issue with me, just because I don't like something about myself, I can't take it out on this particular kid. I can't be harder on them. Like, how many kids lose heart because their dad doesn't like themselves? How many kids lose heart because their dad had a hard day at work? Like, if you don't like you, don't take it out on your kids. Don't take it out on them. You'll discourage them. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that at all. Now, our discipline should never be lacking, but it should never be harsh. Our discipline should also come with encouragement. I mean, we live in a world that's just full of discouragement, right? This is just discouragement everywhere you turn. Well, as Christians, we should be the most generous people in the world when it comes to encouragement. Man, everyone we see, we should be authentically and specifically encouraging them, whether we know these people or not. Our kids should be the greatest beneficiaries of that. If we really want our kids to thrive, give them discipline and give them encouragement. Never be harsh with one and be generous with the other. And it's a whole lot easier to do that if we're wearing those clothes of mercy and compassion and kindness and gentleness and humility. It's a whole lot easier if everything we do and say is meant to represent Jesus well. It's a whole lot easier to do that if we've got that lens on that every relationship we have, whether it's marriage, whether it's with our kids, whether it's our friends or our roommate, if it's always about that other person. So if it's about the other person, then today, and how can I set up my wife and serve her so that she thrives? How can I encourage and respect and honor my husband so that he thrives? How can I love and encourage my kids so that they thrive? And if you're not married, if you don't have kids, this still applies to you in every relationship. Put that lens on that it's always about the other person. Can I live a life in which the most important person in the world is the one that's standing right in front of me? Because that's exactly what Jesus did. Can I serve them? Can I bless them? Can I honor them? Can I encourage them? What can I do to make their day just a little bit better? Why? Because that's what Jesus did. That's what Jesus did. Why would we keep doing that? Well, we're going to get to more why and more examples next week. Let me pray. God, we know you have our best interests in heart because you're a good Father. So we just want to give you praise. We want to give you honor. We want to give you glory today. Man, thank you for setting up our relationships that mirror your relationship with us, that it's always about the other person, and through that there's more satisfaction. But God, this is really hard. It's hard to put my wife first. It's hard to put our husbands first. It's hard to not be harsh with our kids at times. Father, we ask for patience and wisdom on how to lead out in our relationships, whatever they are, that we would represent you well, Jesus, in them. And that's just what we'd be known for. These authentic, real relationships where we're putting other people in front of us, and that's just so contagious. It's one of the reasons people were drawn to you, Jesus. Help us model it well, because it's hard. We love you. It's in your precious name we pray. Amen.